Okay.
Oh, that was faster than I thought. That seems to happen a lot these days. Hey, folks. Thanks for tuning in to the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty. And today we're talking pop culture and gaming the way we usually do. And with us is a special, Waldo, I think you've been on before, haven't you?
I was on once before for the Supers Revised interview.
A couple years back, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I'm not going to attempt your last name because I suspect I will probably slaughter it. Could you go ahead and tell our listeners your full name and what you're about?
Yeah, it's Aldo Regalado is my full name. And yeah, I'm basically a teacher by day and a gamer and you know, aspiring game designer by night. So cool. That's me. Yeah.
So what was your role in the first Supers Revised Edition, which has been a big hit from a few years back?
Yeah, well, you know, I was a big fan of the first edition of Supers pretty much from the start. I was very, very active on the RPG.net forums about the game. And I struck up a friendship with Russ Boyd talking about the system online, and we had a lot of ideas. We were kicking back and forth, and it was right around that time that Walt and Andrew bought Supers back then, and.
Listeners, that'll be Walt Rebillard, who's the frequent co-host, who couldn't make it today. So
yes, and you know, and so I don't know. In the shuffle of the announcement of the new ownership, and in just talking about that online, you know, Walt approached us about writing the revised edition of the rules, because they were interested in kind of polishing up what Simon Washburne had already created, which was really, really awesome. And, you know, but the fan community was saying things like, oh, well, what about vehicles? What about bases? What about certain powers? What about, you know, how much a person without super strength, how much can they lift? You know, things like that. And so Walt approached us with the idea of, you know, revising it, refining it, enhancing it. And we jumped on board, and Russ and I worked for the better part of a year just kicking ideas back and forth and really co-writing it. You know, I mean, we had an equal hand in everything. The very few things that we couldn't find consensus on, we took care of it with sidebars and said, okay, here's one way of doing area effect, but here's another alternative way. And, you know, and that's how it was done. And we've been very lucky that it was so well received.
Yeah. We've been big fans of it here on the Banff Podcast. We have Walt has run several live action sessions for us. It's been a lot of fun. Probably my favorite Supers game right now.
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
Now I understand that right now, you are running a Kickstarter for a setting, for Supers with stretch goals for, well, hang on, just to set it up. It's a setting. And
yeah.
You're also going to, include some additional things for Supers, like, a mass combat system, new heroes, new villains. It's going to have some adventures in there. And you're also going to have stretch goals for converting the material into bash icons and hero system, which I guess we're also calling Champions Complete these days.
Yes.
So that's a big deal. And Joe Singleton did all your art, and I'm a fan of Joe. What motivates you to, I mean, a superhero setting is a massive undertaking. You know, all the interconnections, the settings, the characters. What motivated you to take on this Herculean task?
Well, it was really piecemeal. The whole thing began with me playtesting the first edition of Supers. And, you know, whenever I get my hands on a new super system, I convert all of my favorite DC and Marvel characters into the system just to see if the system can handle them, right? And so I did that for Supers, but whenever I, you know, and the system worked great for it, but whenever I do that, I always end up with these stats, because I try to be as true to the comics as possible in terms of scaling, right? So you need Superman to be that much stronger than Aquaman, and Aquaman to be that much stronger than Batman, and so on and so forth. And to get that scaling, you end up with these very bloated characters. And so when I was done with that experiment, I said, you know what, let me see if I can take the starting point totals and supers and make characters that, you know, feel like these icons, but don't have that massive level of power. But can I make, you know, can I make a Thor sort of homage that kind of feels like Thor, but works within the point totals of the actual system? And so that's what I did. And the first characters in the Superverse were my homage to the Avengers, right? So Freedom Star is my homage to Captain America, and Min-Max is my homage to Giant Man, Ant-Man, and so on and so forth. And as I was designing them, you know, I was designing their stats, but then I also got really, really invested in the writing of their stories. And I'd like to think that some of them at least have really interesting and unique and thoughtful kind of approaches to those archetypes. And also, as I was doing that, you know, I made sure that they were all kind of interrelated in some minor ways and some major ways. And that was the team that was called the Freedom Ring, right? And so that was actually my first publication. I put that out for the first edition of Supers before Walt and Andrew came in and bought the game and hired us to do the second edition or the revised edition. And then when I'd done the Heroes, I said, well, these guys need, because now then I started to think, like, you know, as in terms of product. So I'm like, okay, a hero book, that's not going to be of much utility to people who are playing and need villains. So let me make a book of villains, and these will be the arch enemies of the Freedom Ring. And I came up with the Iron Gauntlet, right, which were, and these, some of them are kind of homage characters, but the Iron Gauntlet, I really kind of freed myself a lot from the constraints of doing, you know, kind of parallels to the comics. So those guys in many ways, I think, are more original than the Freedom Ring in terms of, you know, who, what they're like. But in writing those stories, as you know, it added a layer to the heroes that they were opposed to. And it had added a layer to this universe that I was kind of emerging from this experiment. And then I really kind of got, the bug to create more and more and more and more and more material. And I started to build up a bunch of stuff that I wanted to create. And then Walt hired us. And so I stopped working on that. And we worked for a year on the super on Supers. And then after I was done with that project, life hit me, as it often, you know, as it does every decade or so. And I just had to kind of, I dropped off a lot of the message boards and stuff like that because I just had to focus on life. But I always get kind of dilly-dally. Yeah, I always kept kind of like fiddling with these concepts. And I'm really glad that time was spent away from the project, because when I came back to it, I kind of looked at my plans for what I had originally intended to do, which would probably have been in a universe that would never have stopped building on itself. And I said, you know what? If I continue to do this, I'm going to produce something. I'm going to produce a type of book that I love to read, but I never actually use in gaming, right? Like universes that are really, really, really fully realized. So every major hero is defined, and every major villain is defined, and every nook and cranny of the universe is defined. I love that stuff. I buy all of it. I read it. I enjoy it, but I never actually play it because it always feels like it's universe-centric rather than character-centric, and then to kind of like, you know, shoehorn player characters into that doesn't work, I think. So then I decided that what I would do is that I would shift gears a little bit. I would take the core stories that were already told, and I would use those as background to create a series of adventures that player characters could engage kind of on their own terms. And by walking through these adventures and becoming the main characters in the adventures that are being told, they bump up against all these NPCs that I created. And if they bump up against all these NPCs that I created, they'll discover the universe in a way that makes sense for the PCs, you know, but it's not just going to be kind of crammed down, you know, the player's experience, that there's this world that you have to know. So basically, by running through these adventures, you meet everybody in the universe and you develop relationships with them. You become part of their origins and you live through it in a lot of ways, right? And so I decided any new content that I develop is only content that I absolutely need for the development of these adventures. So there are some new villains in this book. There are some new heroes in this book. There are a lot of mundane non-player characters in this book, but I didn't create those for the sake of creating them. I created them because I needed them to play a role in the adventure that the player characters are going to go through. Right. So, I don't know if that answers your initial question. I kind of feel like I rambled there a little bit, but, you know, the project kind of snuck up on me and then morphed halfway through.
Okay, cool. So if people want to check it out, it's on Kickstarter right now. Go to Kickstarter and do a search for The Superverse, and it comes up. We'll have links in the show notes too. Like I mentioned before, the artist Joe Singleton, who I've used for lots of my products, I run a publishing house called Finning Goat Games. Actually, he just sent me a snack cake comic, because I usually include those in the back of all my adventures.
Those are great.
You know. But it just looks really amazing. What's playtesting been like for you for the adventures?
Yeah, you know, playtesting. I've only gotten to playtesting very recently, and so far the two different groups that I've been running them for the running through the adventures, it's gone very well. They seem to, they seem to enjoy the adventure arcs. On their own terms, in terms of one of the comments I got from my last group was that it seems like I have an avenue for every different type of hero. So that, you know, we ran it. The first session we ran, we had a character that was very much the investigator, the computer hacker, the Batman type, and he was driving a lot of the investigation. And then he couldn't make the second session. So we decided to go ahead and play anyway. And my players first thought they weren't going to be able to proceed because they didn't have like the skill set they needed. But they found that I think I've fleshed out the adventure enough and have presented enough different avenues that when they shifted gears and took a completely different approach to investigating, it was seamless. And they were, you know, they were grateful for that. My own assessment for that play group was that I'm wondering if my stats are a little too low. I thought that the villains were a little bit too easily overwhelmed, especially the main villain. Although that wasn't the case with my first playtest group. So, you know, I'm still kind of working through a lot of those things. And one of the things about the Kickstarter is that, you know, for $1 you get the rough draft of the whole manuscript. So I'm hoping that those who do check out at least the $1 version will be able to provide, you know, that kind of invaluable feedback. But so far it's been pretty solid.
Cool. Sounds like it's been a lot of fun. And yeah, I know what you mean about adventure design, trying to give plenty of levers for different characters. Because, you know, yeah. If you have to break up after one session and the Batman guy isn't showing up, there's got to be a way where, you know, the rest of the Justice League or the rest of the Avengers could figure things out without him there.
Right.
But detective work is always, it's one of my pet peeves in RPGs, was that, you know, just research and finding clues and whatnot can be hard to gamify. But
Yeah. I try to let my, I don't know if they realize it or not, but if my players come up with, you know, I'm going to look for clues and I expect that I might find X, Y, or Z, and they roll well enough, and I, you know, I'm like, yes, that's exactly what you figured me out. You know, it's, and they make the rolls, but just in the way that I interact with their questions that they, you know, it kind of, they feel like they're uncovering stuff that maybe they actually invented, you know, and just adds layers and layers to what's going on behind the scenes.
That's cagey. I like that. Nice. So let's talk about the Kickstarter. We have got a base goal of 4,500,
mm-hmm.
and we're about 10% there right now. Mm-hmm. At 5,000, we do bash conversion. So
yes.
And then icons come at 5,500,
mm-hmm.
and then 6,000 for champions complete. So, looks like you are pretty standard out. What kind of tiers do we have? Looks like $1 is the one where you get the immediate manuscript. Level 15, what do you get there?
At 15, you get the PDF. Mm-hmm. At 25, you get the PDF plus a coupon to purchase a POD, a print on demand version at cost. And then at 30, you get all of those things plus all the stretch goals that we hit. Cool. And I'm playing around with, there's been some demand for like an all icons version, like a full icons conversion, not just character conversions or a full bash conversion. And I'm the only, and a full hero conversion. The only reason I'm hesitant on those, because I could do much of that work myself, but I know that my time is going to be limited. I'm a teacher, so once my school year starts again, my time is going to be limited, and I don't want to promise something that I can't deliver. But
it's really nice to hear someone on a Kickstarter say that. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Because that hasn't always been the case. So,
well, yeah, I'd be mortified if I didn't make good on all the promises. So, but we'll see. I have a little time to tool around with stats, and I'm gonna take a close look at the manuscript and ask myself the question: okay, what exactly? How much work would this be exactly to do, let's say, one of these games? And I'm going to try to gauge it. And if I think it's doable, I might, you know, add an alternate dimension tier or something where, you know, maybe it would be possible to get a full on conversion, but we'll see. I'm going to be very judicious about that.
Yeah. Well, layout's a whole other cost, and
right.
I can definitely see that being a thing, but I did Stark City for Icons. Oh God, 7-8 years ago now.
And yeah.
That was kind That's of a big book. Oh, thanks. I had a lot of help. We had like a whole baseball team full of writers on that one. but it was not a slam dunk on the funding. We were right down to the wire.
Mm.
The last like week and a half, we were, you know, preparing contingency plans for what if it doesn't fund. So, it can happen. It was, but you know, we came through at the last end. Have you given any thought to doing, I know a lot of Kickstarters will have a kind of a premium tier where, you know, for a couple $100 you can add a character to the book, or the system designer will run a game for you, or, you know, things of that type.
Yeah. You know, this being my first rodeo and not really, you know, I think I've quote unquote joked with you and or Walt online that I'm a very 20th century guy. Like, my brain doesn't wrap around some of this stuff as easily as other people's brains do. So not being very aware of what folk want with that sort of thing, I wasn't sure what to offer. I would love to run, yeah, I have been thinking about it more the last week or so, but I would love to run a game for a group of backers that, you know, that were at a certain tier. And you know, I had a request on one of the boards for like some art prints, but I wasn't sure what exactly they meant. Like, what is it that, you know, what exactly they mean by art prints, and how would they be delivered, and what, you know, and, you know, adding a character to the Superverse is something that I did briefly think about that, like, you know, if you at a certain tier, but I guess I can still add those if I want to, can I?
Yeah, you can add levels retroactively.
Yeah. So I may do that. But I'd only just started thinking about that, and I was so consumed to trying to finish the video for it and launch it that I didn't, you know, those considerations didn't make it into the first draft of the Kickstarter, so to speak.
I had a chance to look over the manuscript over the last couple of weeks, and I got to tell you, I'm really impressed. I like that. This is kind of reminds me of sort of those old school, you know, Supers RPGs. And when I say old school, I'm thinking of, maybe I shouldn't call the first Freedom City old school, but I mean, it's been like how many years ago now? A whole timeline going back a century or two, and then you kind of focus on one city. In your case, it's Del Rey. You got some really nice maps, you know, giving physical locations for people to play down. And then you've got, you know, as you read through the book, you know, you get to the part about, hey, you know, here's the police, and you get, oh, okay, here's the stat blocks for the police chief and the SWAT commander and SWAT officers, and, you know, it's it feels like a really, you know, fleshed out, lived-in world that you've definitely, you know, been thinking about.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate that. I was really trying to walk the fine line because, right, all the characters that you just mentioned are actors in the adventure, with the first adventure, and some of the other adventures too. So again, those are characters that I created not for the sake of making them, but because they actually have utility in the adventures and the player characters will be interacting with them in some way. So I was, in a sense, I wasn't sure how people would feel. Like, would they feel that it was a fleshed out enough universe? Would they feel that it was too fleshed out? But so far, you know, people seem to think that it feels, you know, like a lived in world, but hopefully not in an overwhelming sense. That's kind of the balance I was trying to strike. Yeah. Very quick. When you say old school, that there's a kind of an old school feel to it. Yeah. Freedom City is something that obviously was in the back of my mind. I love those books, and it was kind of in the back of my mind when I was writing this, but also the probably what it harkens back to most for me is the Champions, the fourth edition Champions Universe book. Is what it was probably, that's probably in terms of gaming supplements, probably my most direct inspiration.
Wow. That's real old school. Okay.
Yeah. I played Champions for 20 years straight and then switched to M&M for about 10 years. And then, and then I've been Rules Light ever since. So Supers, I went through Bash to before I got to Supers, but I love all of those games. But Supers has been it since I encountered it.
Oh, I hear you. Now, there's one section in your book you've got, I know it's a working draft where you talk about Del Rey random encounters.
Yeah.
Random encounter tables, speaking
of. And it's blank. Yeah. It's one of those spots one of the things I wanted to do with Del Rey is really make it a sandbox. So that if I have a player that says, I'm going to go patrolling, that I could roll on this random encounter table. And it could be that because of a random encounter, there's a foreshadowing, there's an encounter they have that foreshadows a previous adventure, or that riffs off of a point in a villain's write-up that maybe isn't directly dealt with in the adventure, but gets kind of played out on the side in this kind of random encounter. And it's blank because I haven't yet, I was focused on all the other aspects, and now that the Kickstarter is running, I'm going to go and turn to that and generate tables. I hadn't decided if I was going to generate the tables based on sort of where in Del Rey, or if it was going to be a general Del Rey table. And I also wanted to balance the table with, like, I'm considering providing, like, two versions of the table, one that's just a superverse focused one, and then a second version that provides blank spots for the game master to insert random encounters with villains that he or she generates, or with, you know, enemies that are on the character's character sheets or whatever. So I have to think my way through that section a little bit, but I definitely want it to be in the book.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I always love random encounter tables. I was playing around with them. I just sent you a link for one I've been working on Google Drive for a year or two now.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I sent you the link. So it just seems like it's one of those things that's kind of hard to get right because, you know, there's so many possibilities in a city encounter, and you throw in supers and, you know, everything's kind of specific to, you know, your setting and the characters, and, you know, there's a lot of different variables to work in there, which I guess is why you're talking about maybe having some of them be free form or GM customizable.
Yeah. I'd like for that to be the case.
Okay, cool. So what part of your setting are you most excited about? What do you think is the coolest bit you've got here?
Oh man. You know what? It's funny because there's a villain that he started off as a plot device. Like, there wasn't much to him, and in some ways there still isn't. It's one of those characters, like, if you're thinking of, like, the Silver Age of comics, where this, you know, I don't know, like when Thanos first showed up, right? And he's just kind of like a big, you know, kind of presence, but not much to him. And then later on, it gets kind of retooled and retooled until he becomes something far more significant. And there was a character in this book that was kind of like that. And when Joe Singleton drew the image for him, it was so exciting. And I thought, wow, this character should be more than he is in this adventure series. And so it's almost like the stuff that's most exciting to me, because I'm excited by all of it, but the stuff that's most exciting to me are the things that developed while writing this that show the promise for future development. So I'm already thinking, you know, based on the character's probable end, and there are multiple possible ends, right? Many infinite possible ends, perhaps, but based on the character's probable ends, like I've come up with, I'm starting to come up with like a whole nother kind of, saga about how that would allow the player characters to engage that character more fully. So those are some of the things. That's one of the things that pops to mind immediately when you ask me that question.
Who's your favorite character in the setting?
You know what? I have a real soft spot for Freedom Star. Freedom Star, who's the Captain America homage. Maybe that's because I grew up reading a lot of Captain America, a lot of Englehart Captain America. But you know, I in developing Freedom Star, you know, I'm a historian by training, and I teach U.S. history. And one of the things that I studied most was, you know, in school and in my work was African American history. And there was so much of that character in terms of developing where his motivations come from, or even just like costume pieces and whatnot that are rooted in the African American experience. You know, his grandfather was one of the, he's long lived because of the, because of his powers, but his grandfather was one of the, basically the 54th Massachusetts Regiment soldiers. And, his grandmother was a Harriet Tubman type. And then, you know, him coming through that legacy and how that expresses itself in his costuming and different pieces like that. I really, really just like the work I put into him in those ways. He's probably my favorite. Let me see about the villains. Well, the villain that I'm most excited about is probably the one I was just mentioning. And then I don't know. I like Mammoth a lot. He's a very, he's a humanoid woolly mammoth. But as somebody pointed out today when I shared his character sheet online, there's this really disturbing aspect to him, because he was he's inspired by an old Kaska myth or legend about a carnivorous woolly mammoth. Like a monstrous entity that's going around eating people until the hero of the tribe goes and defeats him using magic weapons. And I've interpreted that kind of like if woolly mammoths were wiped out by ancient hunter-gatherer over hunting, that this is like the vengeful spirit of the unleashed upon the death of the last woolly mammoth, and it's now incarnate in this person. And so he hates humanity, and I think I leave it open for how much people want to actually play up the actual horror part of it, where he will eat the people, he will eat people. But there's just this really, when I was creating some of these villains, I was really reaching for I think a horror kind of aspect. And I think he's one of the ones that captures that most satisfyingly for me.
That sounds like some old world werewolf apocalypse stuff.
Yeah. I never played Werewolf Apocalypse, but I did play it, but I wasn't that steeped in the universe. Did they have like a were mammoth in there?
No, but there was, there was one tribe, I want to say it was the Get of Fenris tribe book, although it might have been one of the North American tribes, who was still pissed about the mammoth extinction.
Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, that sounds pretty cool. And something else I wanted to mention was you've got a bunch of character standees for adventures in the back of the book, which is always nice to see.
Yeah. That's another thing, you know, in developing this book, I think it really is like so many different products kind of like, oh, and these, you know, well, basically all the old Villains of Vigilantes modules that all had, they didn't have standees, but they had counters. Yeah. All those counters, I used to love those, and so yeah, I was like, I have to have counters in here, and those are there. I like those too. I intend to, you know, to do more.
Cool. I like that idea. All right, nifty. So when you're not designing games, what do you do to keep busy, Aldo? What are you into?
Gosh, well, I've been listening to, okay, like I told you, I'm a 20th century mentality who's only now waking up to the 21st century. So just recently, I'm like, ooh, podcasts, like those are things. So I've been listening to you guys a lot recently. And
I apologize in advance. I'm sorry about all that.
No, I enjoy your talks very much. And one of the things that I'm always kind of envious of is the pop culture chat at the beginning or at the end of these things. And I'm like, wow, these guys are like into so much stuff. And I love, you know, that. And I'm thinking about my own life and I'm so busy with, I teach high school. I then teach night classes at the University of Miami. In the summers, I'm teaching at FIU. I tutor a kid. I'm a dad to three kids. I have like no time. Right now, the free time I've had, I've been kind of dedicating to, you know, working on this project. I have a gaming night that I do every 2 weeks, and pretty much all my other time is kind of, you know,
spoken for.
But this summer, I did, since I do have a little free time in the summer, I did start watching this series called My Hero Academia.
What's that about?
It's okay, so a friend of mine, one of the guys I was running the playtest for, turned me onto it. It's an anime. I'm not a huge anime fan, although I do like a good, you know, series when it comes my way. And I wasn't sure that I was gonna like this, but I've been having a lot of fun with it. It's I'm streaming it on Hulu, and it's basically the premise is that it's a world where 80% of the population developed superpowers, probably, I'm guessing, like two generations, maybe three generations ago. And there's nobody knows why, but little by little, it turned out that 80% of the world had some sort of power. Some of them are very, very minor, but some of them are very, very grand. And as a consequence, the world has turned into, you know, like the pages of a comic book, right? So there are heroes and there are villains and there are colorful costumes. And the focus of the show basically starts off in a high school where, you know, the number one profession of choice for all the kids in the school is to be a hero. And, you know, much the same way that everybody wants to be like an, you know, a professional athlete or somebody or something, everybody in this world wants to be a hero. And the main character is like the one kid in the class that doesn't have a quirk, what they call quirks. And, but because he doesn't have a quirk, and because he had always admired, he had this fascination with the most powerful hero on the planet, whose name is All Might, and he always wanted to be like All Might. Since he doesn't have a quirk, he's dedicated his life to just studying superheroes and powers. So whenever there is like a super villain superhero battle in the middle of the town, he runs over and he takes notes. And then based on like his knowledge and based on his extreme desire to fulfill this destiny, after a chance encounter with All Might, he gets what he needs to join the national school, the most prestigious national school for heroing in the world. And he, along with him, is enrolled his childhood rival who has an awesome superpower. And so, you know, it's really fun. It goes from there, and you know, there's all the high school politics and the overcoming the insecurity stuff that goes on with those kinds of stories. The villains are really disturbing and dark when you get to the last few episodes. The villains are really, really scary and nasty and vile. And the heroes are just, you know, some of them are more serious than others. A lot of them are very cool. A lot of them are just very, very silly. Like, there was a throwaway character called Cementos, and his power is that he controls cement, right? And he shows up in one scene, and he's got this big cement slab for a head. And, you know, it's kind of silly in that way, but it's also a lot of fun. And, you know, so that's kind of what I've been into this summer.
Oh, cool. I thought I had a pretty good beat on all superhero media, but that's one I have never heard of before. So I'll check that out. Thanks for the tip.
Yeah. You'll have to let me know what you think.
Yeah, we'll do. So let's go ahead and wrap things up. Anything else you want to add before we close things down for the episode?
Goodness. No, I think that's good for now. The only other thing that I'll say about the Superverse is that it has a few new rules. As you mentioned very briefly at the very beginning of the podcast, there is a mass combat system that I developed for it, and I only developed for it because, again, one of the modules called for it, and it's essentially like, how can you effectively have your hero or your superhero team fight an entire army and have that be something that can be narratively interesting? And I've designed something that I think is interesting, but I'm really hoping that people will give me feedback on the playtest.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, I mean, a lot of systems will handle that just by treating a unit as a character, just giving it, you know, the same kind of stats. Do you take that sort of approach or do something different?
I build off of the MOOC rules from Supers, and I tweak them a little bit cosmetically. I don't change any of the mechanics for them, but I tweak them cosmetically. And then what I've done is that I've broken up, let me see how best to describe this, because I haven't verbally articulated it. I've only written it down, but you know, it, they the so the larger unit, the company, will be X number of dice as a MOOC, but then I provide an option for a hero who can't take on something that has that high a rating. The hero has an option to make a maneuver roll and engage a smaller unit within the company. So maybe a hero wants to maneuver to attack a fire team or to attack a battalion or what have you, and therefore have a greater chance of success. And when I've designed it so that if a hero takes out a couple of fire teams, it has an effect higher up on the hierarchy of the bigger entity, right? So you could feasibly have your Superman type take on the entire company while your Batman jumps in and starts taking out fire teams, and your sort of middleweight takes on something in the middle, and they'll all kind of be helping each other out, right? And then there are some random encounter tables within the system for, like, if you mess up your maneuver roll, guess what? You got more than you bargained for, right?
That makes sense. So middleweight is maybe Aquaman punching tanks?
Yeah, I was going to say Aquaman, and then I thought I was looking for something a little higher up, but DC is kind of like, it has a pretty, its middleweight category is kind of thin, right? You got heavyweights. I guess Aquaman's the best example, one of the best examples.
Well, yeah, it depends on how you look at him. Some people would argue he's a heavyweight, but I mean, you kind of got the high-end guys, and then you got the, you got Batman and guys at that level.
Yeah, Batman.
So, all right. Well, hey, Aldo, it's been great talking to you. We try to get you back for a demo session sometime in the near future. To all of our backers, please go to Kickstarter, do a search on Superverse, and check it out. Consider backing. And we will catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.
Thank you.